You're listening to City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes. No conversation about the 1996 Olympic Games would be complete without some time devoted to a certain blue something by the name of Izzy. Atlantans fortunate enough to have been around for the Games have a lot to remember fondly, but the mascot remains a subject of ridicule, embarrassment, or just confusion. Gavin Godfrey spoke with Izzy's creator and wrote an article on the wayward mascot for artsatl.com. Producer Mike Johns invited Godfrey in to find out, what is it?
So you talked to the guy that designed it.
Yep, John Ryan is his name. Yep.
What happened there?
So it's funny because he often gets pegged as the man that we should blame, we should all target for our Izzy anger and frustration.
And before we go further, like, just explain what Izzy was.
So Izzy, because obviously the name before Izzy was What's It or What Is It, because the big joke was, you know, the Olympics comes out with this mascot. Every Olympic Games has a mascot that's supposed to be kind of like your brand recognition of the games that are happening, right? So this mascot comes along for the 96 Games, initially called What's It, because you didn't know what it was. It was this big blue blob. It looked like some weird cartoon character, maybe just like a teardrop, maybe a raisin. Everybody was really confused about what it was. It was blue, like the rings were incorporated into parts of its body. It occasionally wore sneakers at first.
It had stars coming out of its backside.
Yeah, like, you know, it was supposed to have the 96 Olympic logo and all that tied to this character, right? So they put out this design, the first ones come out, and as you might have guessed or what we're talking about, people hated it, ultimately because it was designed for children. It wasn't for us. John Ryan was part of a company, Design FX, who was under another company, Crawford Communications. As he tells his story, I believe it was the Atlanta Journal said, hey, maybe we should put out some open call for artists who might want to design this logo. John Ryan says that his company threw their name in the hat, thought it would be a good opportunity. In his words, they were one of only a few local companies that submitted because everybody else was like, there's no way we're going to do this and not get paid. You guys want us to create a mascot for the opportunity of doing it for the games but don't want to compensate artists for it. So apparently a lot of artists locally did not want to take part.
And this is an argument that we still have today.
Exactly. Like, it still happens today. So it's still the same thing going on. So a few artists said, okay, why not? It could be a good opportunity. Design FX, Crawford Communications, John Ryan's company did it. They took part. Ultimately, they were selected for what they initially thought was going to be an opportunity of a lifetime. But as the story, as we read the Q&A with Mr. Ryan, it was far from that, actually.
So before we get into the controversy around it, talk about John Ryan's thinking behind the design of the character.
Okay, so yeah, the best thing I can say about this guy is he and his team were a little ahead of their time, right? So what they were really big into was CGI animation. They thought this was a cool new technology, a cool way for art to be created outside of, you know, all the traditional means that had come before that.
But, yeah, and just to put this in the timeline, this would have been before 1996. So when did they pick up the commission?
So I remember he said he arrived here in 1991 from St. Louis. He had been in St. Louis for 18 years. He came here to Atlanta, and I believe even before the announcement was made, they had this competition on deck.
So we're talking early 90s.
Early like 90s.
91, 92.
Yeah, and so the technology hadn't quite hit mainstream yet.
Toy Story was released in 1995, to put it in perspective.
Exactly, yeah. But having Pixar and these things happen, John Ryan's initial thinking was, you know, this is actually going to be big. And he says at the time, Atlanta was apparently known as Silicon Valley East. So in his mind, what he was doing was, like Atlanta, what he thought at the time was very progressive, he was jumping ahead on something that he thought was going to be big in the future. The CGI animation, and he thought, if Atlanta's this progressive city that's doing all sorts of new cool things that has it being dubbed Silicon Valley East, why don't we create a character that kind of speaks to that? He's like, you don't want a peach or a pecan or any of the state. We don't need a thrasher, you know, as our mascot. He's like, I don't want something that's so obviously Southern. He's like, Atlanta is a city that's trying to figure out its identity. It's forward thinking in his opinion. So he's like, how about I create a character that's also like that. So all he wanted to do was celebrate the CGI animation technology, but also speak to ultimately a city trying to figure itself out.
Yeah, those sound like good intentions. Mm-hmm. Where did it go off the rails?
Okay, so as he tells it, you know, his team gets together, they come up with these designs, and it's crazy. The design process, how they had to submit was just wild. He had equated it to a high school science fair where you get those big tri-panel poster boards. Mm-hmm. You put them on a table surrounded by everybody else's. So the real problem was they just weren't allowed to pitch their idea in person. They had to come up with a board full of sketches, also their mission statement. You know, basically what I told you about this kind of progressive, forward-thinking Atlanta. And they just put it up for the science fair. Theirs got chosen. And from there, you know, it felt like he said, you know, that the Olympic Committee, Billy Payne and co., really were buying their concept, really bought the idea and really respected the artist. And so the first little incarnations of Izzy come out. The debut was in the Barcelona Games as mm-hmm. those were closing out. So that's when you saw them, and then the backlash hit. And John Ryan says the moment he knew it was all bad was when first he was in a meeting with all the committee, and they said, hey, you know what? I think we should have shoes on Izzy at all times. He raised his hand and just said, I don't think artistically that makes sense, only because not only did they want him to have shoes on the whole time, they wanted his shoes on backwards.
Backwards.
They're like, the kids are wearing their pants backwards. This is like crisscross hair, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, the kids are doing everything backwards. Why not his shoes be backwards? And John Ryan apparently just kind of raised his hand and was like, I don't necessarily think that works. And then he was pointed at, told to shut up, was actually escorted out of the meeting. They put in another member of his team because he said that member knew to shut up, did not talk. So right then, that was his first red flag. And then he said, the committee comes in with these new set of designs. And as these are John Ryan's words, he said, they look like they were created by somebody's mouth-breathing nephew. And he's like, they wouldn't tell us who created them, but they said, this is more of the direction we want to go in. And they said the character at the time looked more Disney-like. And they see the changes, and he said to himself immediately, okay, we see what's happening here. You guys think you can do this without us. And as he says in the story, he's like, we had to tell ourselves that these guys might end up being the client from hell. So let's get out while we can. And they left almost halfway through the process. But as he says, what happened is he created a toy. It was the Olympic Committee's toy. He designed it. They took it from him, and it's their toy. They break it. They did whatever they wanted to. He's like, that was there. So right then, I guess that's when he kind of felt like, okay, this was the opportunity of a lifetime. Now they don't necessarily care about our vision or what we have to say anymore from this point on. So that was pretty much it for him.
The Atlanta Olympic CEO, Billy Payne, has spoken mm-hmm. elsewhere about Izzy. One of the things that that struck me in his talking about it was how little he seemed to regard the importance of having an Olympic mascot. He was quoted in Atlanta Magazine as saying, what the mascot represents is a drop in the bucket compared to what you want an Olympic Games to say about your community. We didn't even think we were compelled to do something that would make somebody in Australia say, that mascot must be from Atlanta, Georgia. It never crossed our minds, end quote. Did John Ryan have any thoughts on that attitude?
Oh, yeah. So, what he touched on a lot, too, was what the Olympic Committee's vision for this mascot was. So, and I think that's important to mention in terms of, I guess, how Billy Payne probably thought. The idea, he said, when they first met with the committee and had their brief was, we want you guys to create something that the kids will react to. Basically, you're creating something for the children. And he even says, you know, like, this isn't for Mike Lukovich or Colin Campbell. This isn't for the AJC reporters and the journal reporters at the time. He was saying that, we were specifically told to create something that the kids would love and that would sell in the stores and sell merchandise. So the crazy thing about Izzy, what's it, whatever you want to call it, regardless of whether or not people thought creatively it made sense or culturally did it fit with Atlanta, it still sold well in stores. The toys, the dolls, the merchandise, as ugly as people thought it was making money. And John Ryan even mentions that, you know, the Atlanta Olympics, you know, made money. Unlike some games that happened leading up to our games, some countries lost a lot of money. And so Atlanta made money, And people, including, it sounds like, Billy Payne himself, believe that Izzy was a big part of that because that merchandise was selling like crazy. So in his mind, I'm assuming, you know, in talking with John, that the idea was that, okay, we created it to sell to kids. The kids and their parents are buying it. What's the big deal? Who cares what it looks like? If it sells, all right, we've succeeded. The sense I got from John Ryan is that Billy Payne was a great businessman, but he might not have necessarily knew of how to best work with artists.
That was artsatl.com writer Gavin Godfrey speaking with producer Mike Johns. Mike is in the studio with us now. Mike, did you own any Izzy merchandise?
Well, you know, I cannot honestly say no. I never did. I don't remember what any of it was. My father did work as a volunteer during the games. He was one of the guys in the straw hats helping people, you know, with directions around downtown. So he may have brought home like a pin or something. I don't remember owning any plush dolls, but I was a young teenager during the game, so I was a little bit out of their target demo, I think.
Beyond going to sleep with your little cuddly stuffed Izzy's or the like.
Never happened.
This is unbelievable. John Ryan and his team were never paid for designing Izzy?
No, because and that was actually in Gavin's article. He touches on that other other design firms in Atlanta actually refused to participate in the bidding process because it was going to be pro bono. So they decided that they didn't want to work for free. But thinking that it was a good opportunity to design effects, decided to throw their hat in the ring. Now, at the end of the process, John Ryan did say that Crawford Communications did give him a bonus. And from ACOG, he did receive, he says, a bottle of unmemorable wine that was labeled as being from Izzy Vineyards.
Was it blue? It was from Izzy.
Izzy Vineyards. And he received a tie. And as far as working for free, the Olympic Committee, that seemed to be sort of their normal operating procedure. Gavin actually told another story that involves director George Lucas.
Of
Star Wars fame, yes.
Of Star Wars fame. At George Lucas.
George Lucas invited the Olympic Committee out to Skywalker Ranch. You don't get invites to Skywalker Ranch. Like, you have to be a Jedi, basically. So they go out there, and he's giving this tour of the ranch, and apparently there's somebody on the committee who just jumps out and says, hey, we think it'd be great for your resume if you created a short film for the Olympics with all those cool special effects you do. And apparently before the guy could finish talking, George Lucas had the entire committee escorted out of his house. They got kicked out of Skywalker Ranch because it was just the fact that, you know, they thought that they could help boost the resume of George Lucas. And
yeah, that somebody on the committee had the temerity to ask George Lucas to do something for free.
John Ryan said that was the whole attitude they had toward everybody.
Oh boy!
Yeah, and so what John Ryan pointed out to Gavin was that this is an ongoing problem, and this is something that we hear over and over again. You know, companies asking artists to work for free for exposure, quote unquote, when you know most artists that I know that you know would prefer to work for money.
Well, some acknowledgement that there is a value to their work,
exactly.
even if it is not the full amount one would expect. People think not-for-profit means no money. That's not true.
Not true at all.
Well, how would you sum this all up, Mike? Is he the greatest embarrassment?
I don't think that it was a huge embarrassment. I think that the mascot is a little quirky, and I don't think that it is quite as big of a fiasco as people tend to remember it as. As Gavin pointed out, it did make Atlanta a lot of money, which is not everything, but it wasn't a complete failure. As strange as it could have been, as strange as it was.
I was hoping for a peach. Too common. Mike Johns, thanks so much. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta.